What's up, Kings fans? If you haven't heard about Anchor by Spotify, it's the easiest way to make a podcast with everything you need all in one place. Let me explain. Anchor has tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. When hosting on Anchor, you can distribute your podcast on listening platforms like Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and more. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. And best of all, Anchor, it's totally free. Download the Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started.
This is for you, Kings fans, wherever you may be. All the frustration and disappointment of the past is gone. The 45-year drought is over. The Los Angeles Kings are indeed the Kings of the National Hockey League. They are the 2012 Stanley Cup champions.
Cleared away by the Kings, picked up by Martinez. Martinez to Clifford, feet to the right side to Foley with a shot. Save, rebound, score! Alec Martinez has won the Stanley Cup for the Los Angeles Kings, and royalty reigns again in the NHL.
I'm Scott Kimball, and we got a big show going on for you today. Before we get started, we bring in our panel. First of all, our fearless leader, Mr. Ryan Sykes. How you doing, Ryan?
Hey, Scott. I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm fine, brother. I'm fine. And up next, we got Jack Weber. What's going on, Jack?
Not too much. Just enjoying a Saturday night here. No Kings to watch, so just channel flipping a bit. And hopefully tomorrow.
Well, we got Ontario Reign on right now. They're up 2-0, so that's a good sign.
Yeah, ooh, nice. Scored.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Our man Alex Turcotte coming through. Russell Morgan, what's going on?
Hey, what's going on, guys? How's it going?
Doing fine, brother. We're doing fine. And last but certainly not least, we got Mr. Ryan Cowley. What's going on, buddy?
How's it going, guys? As usual, I'm very happy to be here, and it's a great Saturday night. So thanks. So it's going to be fun.
All right. Yes, it is. It's going to be a lot of fun because our guest today, this is a man that needs no interdiction at all, but he's going to get one anyway. You can find his work on thefourthperiod.com. You can also hear him at the Hot Stove on NHL Radio on Sirius XM. And you also know him by the Kings of the Podcast with the Mayor John Hovind, along with other several media out there. And he's also the chairman of the Los Angeles chapter of the Professional Hockey Writers Association. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you the one, the only, Mr. Dennis Bernstein. Dennis, thanks for coming on. How are you tonight?
Guys, great being on Rink Royalty. But, you know, that's way too long of an introduction. So just let's – this is like a Twitter reunion. I mentioned it before we started that I know all you cats on Twitter. I appreciate all the support. But, yeah, let's talk Kings hockey.
All right, let's do it. Well, you know, I know you're a fan of WWE, so I wanted to give you a WWE-like introduction, you know?
It's funny you say that.
All right, so Dennis,
you got the belt.
Oh, gosh, awesome. She's got a belt.
Yes. There you go, Scott.
Excellent, excellent. The old school WCW big belt. I love it.
You got it, brother. You got it. The Ric Flair belt.
All right. Hey, there you go. Woo! All right. Before we get going, Dennis, I want to get a little background on you just so our listeners know a little bit more about you. So you're from New York City. Is that correct?
That's correct. Born and raised in the Bronx. A big Yankee fan.
Oh, God. Dennis.
Me too. All right. Hey, listen. Us New York Staters got to stick together. I love it. All right.
No.
All right. So when you were there, tell us a little bit. Were you you were a Devils season ticket holder, correct?
I was, yeah. You did some research here back in like the mid-90s. So I knew cats like Mike Coluso and I'm really good friends with Marty Brodeur. I actually lived in a high-rise in Hackensack that rented out short-term apartments to professional players. So I know a lot of the Giants, the Yankees lived in there, Buck Showalter, a lot of different people. And with the Devil side, got really close with Coluso, who's, you know, is going through some tough times right now. Marty Brodeur, who I you know, still to this day, when he comes to Staples Center, I see him. He always says, "Hey, Dennis, how's it going?" So it was a very unique time, and those Devils teams were, you know, classic, tough, defensive-minded teams, and it was exciting to watch. And that's how I really got back into hockey. I'm not that young, guys, so I grew up a Ranger fan, actually, in the 60s and 70s, watching when there were four channels on TV and black and white TVs. Away from the game in the 80s and then back in the 90s when the Devils started winning. I just went to a party once and was talking to some guy in his 20s, and he knew he was connected to some of the players. And, you know, it's like the North End in Hermosa. Here in Jersey, there was a bar where all the players hung out. And I just realized what great guys they were. So I wanted to get back and cover the sport, and that was kind of the genesis of it. I started my own little fan newspaper in 96 or 97, and it came to L.A. in 98.
Oh, nice.
Very cool. Very cool. Sounds, you know, it's funny you mentioned those guys, because I actually live pretty close to Utica, New York. And during that time, they had their AHL affiliate, the Utica Devils. So I got to see Marty Brodeur and a lot of those guys before they came up to the big club. So that's really cool. So you said you had a newsletter when you were with the Devils. So is that basically what led you into L.A. and to the fourth period?
Yeah, well, you know, I got married, I got divorced, and I was just done in New Jersey. It was just nothing more to do. And just to take a step back, I did start that letter, and it was the worst time, because I wanted to give publicity to the Devils when Lou Lamoriello was running the team, and it's the last thing he wanted, right? I mean, Lou wants to hang out a single thing, hockey tonight, and that's why he wants to promote the team. So and the worst thing you could tell me is I can't do something, right? So that kind of gave me a little bit motivation. But for anybody that wants to get in this sport and want to do media, I tell you, I'm the least qualified person on my credentials to do this. And I'll give you the example. I have an accounting degree, a master's in finance. I got a C in English in freshman English. I've never taken a journalism or creative writing course in my life. So what am I doing here as the chair of the Professional Hockey Writers Association? So if you have a passion and you can construct sentences. Like, I was a really good business writer. Wasn't a great writer. I could never write a book. These guys that write books, like my buddy Brian Kennedy, who writes for Inside Hockey, he's written 9 books. That's not me. Like, if you read my writing, it's like 1,200 words, and I could just knock it out. So you don't have to be the greatest writer in the world. You don't have to be the most knowledgeable guy in the world. I'm never going to be Bob Kenzie. But you got to have passion. You got to have some knowledge. And you got to have some personality these days to kind of separate yourself. So that's kind of the genesis of what I've been doing for the last 20 years.
Yeah, and Dennis,
that's awesome.
Yeah.
Dennis, I actually dug up the Offside Hockey Talk podcast that you were on back in at the end of July. It was when I first reached out to you, how your story kind of resonated with me, because, you know, I'm a civil engineer full-time during the day, but, you know, I spend hours and hours at night writing this stuff and setting alarms early in the morning to get up and do it. You know, like you said, it's just kind of that passion that I have to do it.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, and look, I tell people, like, this, if nothing else, this has become a great hobby for someone. And go do your civil engineering. Do your, look, the sports media business is tough, man. They're cutting jobs left and right, despite what happened with ESPN and NHL here. So I always advocate people, like, do it. It's a lot of fun. It's taken me around the world, literally. But it's like, you know, somebody's asked me if I ever want, and I'm not trying to disrespect the LA Times, I'd never want to be a beat writer for the LA Times. I'd never want to have to sit there and report on every single game and ask Todd the same question about the power play working or not working. That's not me. So at least with the fourth period, I'm a columnist. I write every 6 games with respect to the Kings. I do national stuff and stuff like that. So if you have a passion and you want a voice, go do it. Don't think you're going to, you know, get to Bob McKenzie or Darren Drager's level or just, you know, just do that full time. If nothing else, you'll enjoy it and you'll enjoy following the game. And maybe at some point you get to my level.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's awesome. That's very awesome.
Yeah, that is great.
You know, that's actually very, very inspirational too. So, excellent. So I'll tell you what. Why don't we get down to what we all came on to talk about? That is some LA Kings hockey. All right. So there's a very, very popular hashtag going around the Kings world right now. Play the kid. And I'm sure you've heard about 10,000 times a day. But what's your thoughts on what the Kings should be doing with some of these kids as far as maybe bringing them up to the big club or leaving them down in Ontario to percolate? What do you think?
Well, Scott, here's what I think. I think what they're doing with 90% of the players, I think is fine. I think that what they're doing with Madden, Kupari, Keel Thomas, that's fine. Like, I think they missed a huge opportunity to bring Quinton Fifield up here and put him on the taxi squad when the OHL wasn't running and have him practice and play against Velarde and Kopitar and Carter every day. You don't got to put him in a game, but he should have been up here practicing, because I'll submit to you, when you watch the Ontario Reign play, I'm not sure that's helping his development this year. They can argue that it is. I just think it was a huge opportunity to have Quinton come up. And here's the thing. Once the OHL gets going, he's going to have to come up here anyway. So why did you have him up here all season, travel, learn from Todd, learn at the highest level? That was my thing. And same thing with Kaliev. I could see sending Kaliev down. But remember, if you send Quinton back to the OHL once it opens, then you're asking him to quarantine three times this year. You have to do it with the Canadian national team. You have to do it coming in here to the States. And you have to do it again to play 24 games in the juniors where he's going to dominate. How does that help anybody? So for me, look, I would have preferred, because there's 23 roster spots and six taxi squad, you could have fit these two players up in here and get them up here all season and really evaluate them. Because guess what, guys? There's too many prospects. There's too many draft picks. There's too much cap space. And to say you don't know if these players already yet, you would have known by the end of the season, even they never played a game, like what Kaliev and Byfield could do, because they'd be competing with players at the highest level. So that's my play to kid. And look, I'm tweaking my partner when I say that, but I'm encouraged. To me, the biggest disappointment over the last couple of weeks, Jared Anderson Dolan, when he played a stretch of three games, he looked great. And then he got hurt. I mean, that was that one was a tough one. The rest of them, Elias Anderson, Matt Loft, Wagner, wherever you want to classify these Kupari, I'm fine with that. I just think when you have a number two overall pick, I would have liked to see the opportunity to see what he really could have done, at least practicing against these prime players. So that's kind of my thought about playing the kids, because now I'm going to be hashtagging trade the kids. I don't get it. Saying, okay, they shouldn't make a move in the offseason. I don't understand that. They have these prospect pool with everybody raves about. They have seven picks in the first four rounds, and they have $20 million in cap space. And you're not going to do anything. You're just going to wait and see if these kids develop. That's not me. They got to be more aggressive at this point. I'm Rob Blake's been in this seat for going on 4 years. I'm still waiting for his signature trade. It's been 4 years. So it's not a criticism, but I think they got to get way more aggressive, because the stage is set. Right? You can say you can wait another year to figure out what Byfield's about. But this offseason, if you're going to try to compete against the big boys in the division, you've got to make your move now. The stage is set. So that's the play to kids, right? My rant with respect to what I think they should be doing going forward.
Yeah, very well said.
Dennis, Alex Turcotte scored tonight, so you have to trade him now, right? His value won't be high.
Let's go. Yeah, I agree.
I
agree with everything you're saying. I mean, personally, I'm kind of glad Byfield's been able to get those games with Ontario Reign. I think kind of juggling him between the taxi squad and the LA Kings to start the season would have been kind of detrimental to his development. Because if he would have been in the OHL to start the season if that season was going. So to have him in the AHL, kind of getting those first professional games, I think was good for his development. But like you mentioned, if the OHL season does start, you have to give him up with the Kings. You have to get him up practicing with players like Kopitar and Doughty, get him that development in the NHL. And that's just Russell, only going to accelerate the team.
Yeah, Russell and Dennis, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe the Kings just had to get approval to carry less than four players on the taxi squad.
Correct.
But, you need to be bringing these guys up.
The
thing is with Byfield too, they're kind of in the same situation next season with him. He's either going to have to play in the OHL or the NHL, correct? Because he's only going to be 19.
Right.
It's a tough situation. Plus, you have too many players. How many centers can they have? Somebody tell me, Kupari could be a 2C. Where is he going to play 2C? If Kopitar. Did you see Kopitar this year? He's a Hart Trophy guy. He's not going to wait for 3 years. It's not going to happen. They're just too many players here. And don't think – the other thing is, don't think that you can just take any center – flip him to left wing, and he's automatically going to be a 30-goal scorer. Don't think that Alex Turcotte could just magically do that, right? So I think that's it. So, again, you've got to identify your core two or three, and then you've got to open up the market to these, because that's a great thing. It's not a bad thing. But please identify who the one and two of the future are. Is it Byfield and Gabe? Is it – what's Turcotte going to do? What are you going to do with Akil Thomas? What are you going to do with Kupari? And these are players that you can market and get – legit, we've done our videos. They need a top line left wing. I don't think anybody in the system is a 30 goal scorer. They need a top pair defenseman to play with Drew. I don't care. Bjornfort is not a guy. He never scores, right? I mean, that's the problem. Him and Mikey, like Mikey Anderson to me is Rob Scuderi. Maybe not physically, but he's going to play this very long time. He's never going to be an offensive player. If you watch his shot, he's got no shot. Maybe if he gains weight, maybe a little bit better. But these are not offensive players. These are not guys that you want to pair with Drew Doughty. You want a superior top pair. You could get away with it. But look, this team thought they could get away with Olimata as a top pair defenseman. And that didn't work, right? Yeah. So those are my two. And the great thing is you don't have to make two trades. You can acquire one of those players by free agency, probably the winger, and you got to make the trade for the defenseman. So you hold your nose, you treat some of these prospects that you think might develop into super. And guys, nine guys aren't going to develop into superstars. It doesn't work like that. I'm like, I mean, if you got to sacrifice an Alex Turcotte, because to me, Alex Turcotte, you know who he is? He's Braden Schenn. The fifth overall pick like Schenn was. He's probably going to be a really good player. He's not going to be a superstar. And you're going to get the guy that you need to add to this roster to make your team a dangerous team.
Well, and look at their last four drafts. I mean, the first round, they took Velarde, Kupari, Turcotte, Byfield. Like, these guys are all centers. And he's still got Kopitar playing at a very high level and signed for forever. So, absolutely, this is the one area where you're set. And at some point, you know, whether it's Turcotte or Kupari or whoever, you've got to identify who it's going to be. You are going to have to move some of these guys to address your needs in other areas.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, in terms of left wing, I mean, Arthur Kaliev is probably the best left winger the Kings have right now, but he's still probably at least maybe a year, 2 years away removed from actually making an impact on an NHL roster. So I agree with you, Dennis, in terms of the Kings needing to find that left wing. I mean, how long has it been since the Kings have had a bona fide left wing one? I mean, it feels like forever. But yeah. I mean, you and I have gone back and forth on Twitter a little bit in terms of the top four or that top pair defenseman. I personally think that the top four is actually pretty set for the future. I mean, we all know Bjornfoot and Mike Anderson aren't that scoring type of defenseman, but I mean, when we won those cups, we only really had Drew Doughty and Jake Muzzin. Jake Muzzin really wasn't that scoring type defenseman either. I mean, but Matt Roy's actually stepped up and been really good in terms of analytical offense. So I think he can step up and be one of those top four defensemen as well.
Okay, so let me give you the list of defensemen who have scored an even strength goal this year. Drew Doughty has two, and Curtis McDermott has one. And that's
the list. Russell, I was just going to say, you know, it's a problem.
That's the list.
Curtis McDermott has the second most goals among the defensemen.
That's why he gets in the lineup, guys. Right?
You could get away with it, but I want this team to be more dynamic. Like, and they're doing great 5-on-5, but guys, let's be real. Is Kobe going to be a heart candidate every year? And is Dustin Brown going to produce at 44 goals per year? That's what he's on. That's the run rate. And you know, I get tripped all the time about my favorite player, Adrian Kempe, right? Because right now, right, he's on fire. But, you know, before he got on fire, he scored one goal in 14 games. And the last time I checked, he scored 5 of those goals against the Anaheim Ducks. Did you see Anaheim play last night against San Jose? That's like 2.5 goals, not really 5 goals. Okay? So there is – I want to see progression, and I want this team to be just more dynamic, more dangerous. They're just not there yet. If you're willing to wait 2 years to say, okay, Madden's going to come through, Kupari could go to wing, Turcotte could be the guy, I'm fine. But you know what? There are other teams that don't wait. Vegas doesn't wait. Colorado doesn't wait. And they're already ahead of you, and I get it. They're further along on the development curve. But you got to step up here. Like, the stage is set. So to think that they're going to go into this offseason and do nothing and just say, okay, we're going to continue with progression, they're going to fall behind, to be honest with you, because what happens if these players – I want – you know, and I think that's what they did with Dubois. Like, if they could have traded futures for a guy who was 22 years old, who's controllable for 5 more seasons, you don't think they would have done it with their futures? The issue with Dubois is – that there wasn't a Patrick Laine on this team to trade for. And that's what Columbus wanted. They wanted, you know, if a team out there wants to trade an Eichel or a Dahlin or Phil Forsberg and they want futures, there's not a better team, maybe short of the Rangers who might trade Kako and Lafreniere, to trade with the LA Kings. If there's a team out there that wants to trade existing talent, established talent for futures, this is the best team that can do it. They are the best equipped to do it. Yes. That's when you hear Eichel, I'm not advocating for Eichel. You hear two teams, LA and New York. Those are the two teams because they can give you value with respect to futures because you're not going to trade Jack Eichel for Leon Draisaitl, right? It's going to be for futures. They're going to rebuild. They're already 31st. So I think that's it. So again, it's just that, like, I see everything aligned for this team, and I want them to take the next step aggressively. Others want to just lay back and say, let's see what Bjorn for, let's see what Mike Anderson does more. I've seen enough. I'm not a scout or an evaluator, but I've seen enough to say, okay, I think they'd be part of a championship team, Russ. I absolutely think they are. They're going to be solid players, and they're 19 and 21 or 22 years old. I get that. I want one more piece. I don't want to trade the whole team. I don't want to revamp the whole defense. I want to add one piece on defense, one piece up front, and then go win it and then roll the dice.
Well, and to your point, Dennis, about how patient do you want to be, like, you've got a guy in Kopitar who's still, you know, one of the top 5 or 10 centers in the league probably, but he's 33 years old. So do you want to wait 2 or 3 years until maybe he starts to decline when the rest of the team starts rounding the form? Or do you want to be aggressive and try to win while you still have this guy playing like this?
Yeah, great point, Jack. Absolutely. Couldn't agree with you more.
Yeah, no doubt. And, you know, just with Buffalo, too, you almost have to feel sorry for him because as far as Eichel goes, there's only a few teams that can take on that contract.
Yeah.
So they're really kind of hamstrung as to what they can do there.
I feel sorry for the Buffalo fans. God, I say
every I should rephrase that.
That's kind of what I meant. I say God bless the Sabre fans. I mean, that's what I say every time the radio segment. But here's the thing, Scott. Like, if you're going to make a trade there, if that's your point. Like, there are – how many contending teams with talent can trade for Jack Eichel? They're all up against the cap. How many teams can trade for Galen coming up an entry-level contract? Every team. So that's the guy you trade, not Jack Eichel. And now Jack's got some neck issues and vertebrae issues, so who knows? He's off. He's probably not going to play the rest of the season, so there's an injury factor there. If you got a pool of 3 or 4 teams that can take on Eichel and get you return value, that's great. The guy to trade would be Darlene because you can get futures. Not only that, what's the draft full of this year? Defensemen. So you can get a replacement. If Sabres are 31st, so they can trade. They can draft Owen Power or Lambo or Brent Clark or Luke Hughes. So they can get a comparable talent for that. So to me, logically, that would be the theme. But I agree with you on Michael. There's only – and Kings are one of – hey, here, take this, guys. I know this might be blasphemy with respect to the Kings, but what happens if they trade Jonathan Quick at the deadline? Then they have $25 million in cap space next year. They're not going to make a move? Like, are you kidding? Like, are they going to wait 2 years? Like Jack says, like, how long can you wait at this point in time? So that's – so if they do want to move in 32 – and there's arguments to do it and not to do it, like, then you got to think there's going to be a move. You're clinging $5 million more in cap space. Like, holy cow, what are you waiting for? You're going to trade for 3 guys in the offseason?
Sorry, guys. I wanted to jump in. Dennis, go back to what you were saying about, like, man, Belling Rob Blake. I mean, overall, I've been a fan of his for the last 4 years. But as you said, sorry, forewarning, I have a speech impediment, so sometimes it takes me 20 minutes to talk. But Rob Blake, as you said, hasn't made that big trade yet. And quite frankly, you mentioned the examples of Eichel, Forsberg, Dahlin. I think the time is now because going back to Dean Lombardi and all the drafting he did. But from my vantage point, at least, the most significant step he made, were two big trades, trading Penn and Simmons to Philly, which was tough at first, but they got back Mike Richards, the bona fide leader. And then they traded Johnson for Carter, later in the season, and the rest, as they say, is history.
Yeah, well, look, Rob's cleared a couple of hurdles here, right? I mean, the team was up against the cap when he took over, right? So he's cleared that hurdle. He's built a prospect pool. No problem. He's exported talent, right? Yeah. He's exported Tyler Toffoli. He exported Clifford. He exported Alec Martinez. He sent away a lot of talent, right? He hasn't acquired any talent. Like, the one big deal he made was Kovalchuk, and it blew up in his face. And I guess it was a good risk to take. He could have traded for Max Pacioretty. Max is killing it over there. I mean, and to me, that's the opposite of the spectrum, guys. When I look at Vegas, they always take a big swing, right? And I know some people say, well, they were set up to win because of the expansion draft. That's BS. They traded for Mark Stone, and he gave up a first rounder and a second rounder. Then, following offseason, they traded for Max Pacioretty, and they gave up a first, you know, and they gave up Tatar. And this season, what did they do? They got the biggest free agent in the pool. And they're in your division. Yeah. It's not the Tampa Bay Lightning. They're in your division. They're going to be competitive. And they're doing it with Chandler Stephenson as the one seed. You better trade for a legit.
That's the amazing part right there.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the benchmark. So I get it with respect. You know, and my point is, and I've tried to make this point, you're not operating in a vacuum, right? You're operating against Colorado and Vegas and all these other teams in the West, and Edmonton, who's not going away. If they ever figure out how to surround, you know, those two players up there, they're going to be dangerous as well. So they're not, you're not operating in a vacuum. It's not a business that just doesn't affect. It's totally against the competition. And when you have competition like that, that's super aggressive. Then you got to start getting aggressive, and you have the tools to do it at this point.
Yeah, I think this offseason is the time for Rob Blake to start being aggressive. I mean, I don't think any of us would be critical of what Rob Blake and Kings management has done so far. I mean, like you mentioned, we've built the number one prospect pool in the NHL. I mean, that's pretty much a consensus. I mean, I guess Ottawa and New York have some good ones as well. But I think if this offseason comes and goes and no big move is made, then that's the time to be critical. Because you can't go a full year without playing Byfield or Kaliev or Turcotte in the NHL and then go to this offseason and not make a big move with the amount of pricks that or the amount of ammo that they have. I mean, if they make a move like Dahlin, that's great. I love it. I mean, but there's only really one major move, I think, that will be made with the amount of picks they have. So, I mean, I guess the question would be to you, Dennis, is if you were Rob Blake, would you make that Jack Eichel trade?
I have to think. Here's the thing. Is Gabe Vilardi or Byfield an 80-point scorer when they're healthy like Jack Eichel is? I don't know. I don't think so. Here's the thing. That's not a no-brainer. Okay? Dahlin is, for me, it's a no-brainer. I would do it tomorrow. I would drive the prospects to the airport. We'll get them get out of here. And give them, you know, look, I gave them a first. I want a blockbuster here. You can make a blockbuster. You could put Turcotte and Kupari and a first or 2 seconds in the deal and make it attractive, right? I mean, 3 or 4 for 1. That's what you need to do. And you can do it because you can't bring in all this more talent. What are you going to do with 7 picks in 4 rounds here? So the Jack Eichel thing is tough because, you know, he's in a losing situation. He's probably the reason Ryan O'Reilly isn't in Buffalo anymore, went to St. Louis. And that's the problem with Buffalo. They traded the Conn Smythe winner, and they got nothing for him. Unless Tate Thompson's going to be a 40-goal scorer, that's the worst trade ever, right? So that's my thing. But here's the flip side of that. Maybe Jack Eichel needs to come to a better situation. Because here's the thing. Jack Eichel has the owner's ear in Buffalo. He basically ran Ryan O'Reilly out of town. He's direct line to the ocean. He's not going to have that in L.A. And you know what? If this was 6 years ago, I always laugh about these players like Jack Eichel and Dubois and Lane. Could you imagine if they were on the Kings in 2012 or 13 and they started this with guys like Matt Green and Stoll and Robin Regier in the locker room? They would have thrown against the wall, kicked their butt, and you'd be so. Maybe Jack needs to come to a better organization with a great coach, I think is a great coach, with Kopitar to learn from. Who's he learning from there? Right? Casey Mellstadt, Dylan Cousins? Maybe it's the best thing for him. So Russell, I'd have, you know what? It would depend on the deal. Right now you're probably buying low on Jack Eichel, but the injury factor is okay, maybe the reason he's got 2 goals is that. But remember, they signed a left winger for $8 million and he scored 1 goal, right? What's going on over there? So maybe you're hoping that they can rebuild and stuff like that. But Russ, I don't really know. If you believe in Gabe Vilardi, and I'm sure everybody in this call, you see the flashes, right? You see the flashes. And there's another hashtag, Scott, shoot the puck game. The guy is just not aggressive enough in the offensive zone. I don't get it. Every game I go to, I'm looking, and he's effective, and you can see how he moves in tight, and the skill, you see it. And he's got amazing – he's got a powerful shot. Every time I look down the score sheet, 1 shot, 0 shots. I'm like, I don't understand it. He's got to be more aggressive. But I tell you one thing, he learned some lessons from Todd, because you guys remember early in the season, what did he say? Either you're good or you're not good at faceoffs. Saw what happened. All of a sudden, he got better at face-offs because he got talking to by Todd. I'm sure he got – I saw that. And you saw it with the same thing. Now, Todd doesn't call players out much in the media. He called out Velarde on that, and then he called out Kempe saying we need more from him, and then he got on fire. He got his attention. So to answer your question, Russ, for me, it's a coin flip. It would have to be what they're asking from Buffalo. If it's too much, I don't have to rush out and get him because, as Jack said, you got depth there. Like, you could not trade for Jack Eichel and be a contender if you think these players are legit. Would they be a contender tomorrow if they traded for Jack Eichel? They would, but again, it would depend on the cost for me.
Right.
Well, another player, Dennis, that, you know, and it was his entire line that he called out, but the Blake Lizotte line. I want to talk to you kind of just about Blake Lizotte. Do you see him long-term, or is he just a placeholder here?
I think he's a placeholder, and he's a great story. Any kid that's growing up that's undersized, that didn't get drafted, you can make it to the NHL, so I think it's great. I think he's been heroic sometimes. But at best, Ryan, he's a 4C, right? If you think that Jod or Kupari is your 3C of the future, where does he fit in? He could do great things. You know, he could go to Seattle and the expansion draft and do some great things. I don't even know if he's eligible or not. But, yeah, I just see him as a placeholder. And same thing with Anthony Seau. On a contender, maybe AA is – because, you know, you see some of these goals, like, well – and I'm sure he's thrilled to death he doesn't have a minus 45 next to his game this year. I think that's – but he's been able to be productive in Todd's system. So could he go to an Islanders and be a depth player on left wing for them when they're playoff run? He could. So my question to you is, though, what are you going to do with that fourth-round pick? Like, right. How's that going to help the team? So if he can continue to be productive – I think more Anthony Seau than Lizotte. Lizotte, and as Jack mentioned a couple of times, there's too much depth in this organization in the middle. Like, you got to make room. Yeah. So he was a transitional player. Right. I think of all the players that Dean signed way back in the day, like Scott Thornton and Ladislav Nagy, they were just placeholders. I remember Dean telling me, he goes, people thought we were going to be good when I signed 7 free agents in one post offseason. He goes, you really think that we were going to be good if I signed that many players? So Blake's a great story. He could be a mentor to some of these kids that are coming up. But I think maybe next season will be the last season. I only see him as an option as a 4C. I'm sure you guys can talk among yourselves about Michael Amadio.
Yeah. You know, DB, you mentioned the Islanders. And now with Anders Lee going down, he's out indefinitely. We really don't know how long he's going to be out. You think Lou Lamoriello is going to be giving Blake a call, say, about an Alex Iafallo if we get closer to the deadline?
I think Blake has made it clear that he wants to sign Alex. And I think that you need him for Kopitar and Brown. Because he's never going to be that appreciated, Scott, because he's not a massive goal scorer. He's got, what, 5 goals this year, and he's playing with Kopitar? But he does all the dirty work. He does all the right things. Right? And to me, on this team, if you go get that monster left wing, then Alex is a great 2 or a 3C. You know, he's not the same player, but where he fits in the structure. Like, Tanner Pearson would have been a great 2 or 3 left wing, not a 1. Right, same thing with Alex. He's really not a 1. He doesn't have that skill, but he works well chemistry-wise, and the 2 other guys are productive. He wouldn't make that move. And from what I understand, Rob wants to sign him. He's not going to be that expensive. I think he just hits 2.6 or something like that. Maybe you give him 3, 3.5, and you re-sign him. So I think he'd be part of the solution here, short of an overpayment by Lou, and Lou's not going to be desperate. So I don't think that's going to happen. So I would keep him, but I think once we get to a point where this team is true contender, I think you'll see Alex down the depth chart on my thing.
Yeah.
And a guy like Iafallo who was unsigned just proves your point that they don't necessarily need to stockpile draft picks anymore as far as that goes, because, I mean, there's guys out there that can step right in and fill, you know?
Yeah.
It's Alex is just – he's just a good kid. He hustles. He gets the puck out of the corners for this team. On the top line, he's not doing it on the third line. He's doing it for the top line. He's part of the reason that line is successful. It just works. And, you know, they've tried Kempe up there, right? You would think that naturally the guy with the most talent should be up on the top line. It just doesn't work. And it's a situation where Kempe's too – he defers too much when he's up on the top line. Maybe he's a little intimidated. He doesn't defer to the guys he's been playing right now with Trevor Moore. Like, he's not going to defer to Trevor Moore. He's going to be more aggressive. So I think with respect to Alex, look, the thing is with Alex, you would like to see that big bopper on the power play. The power play is doing great, right? So I'm not complaining about the power play. But going forward, you want that finisher. They don't really have that big threat on the one power play. It tells you how great Kopitar is and how great Drew's been playing at the point, right? But they don't have that massive goal scorer on the top line power play unit, it's just still surviving. So again, I think it's just a reputation thing. And maybe Scott, it's held against him that he wasn't drafted, so he wasn't a first round or a second round pick or a big free agent signing. But I certainly think he could be part of the future. They like him. He is 27 years old. He's not a kid. But I would like to see him come back on like a 3-year deal and then set the stage maybe for the next generation of Kings once that deal expires.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So, you know, going into the offseason, because I was listening to the Kings of the last Kings of the podcast, and you guys both think that the Kings aren't really going to do much at the trade deadline. We don't think anyhow. So going into the offseason, what are some of the left wings you think the Kings should be targeting to do that upgrade that we've been talking about? Yeah.
I did a video on that. So Anthony Mantha from
Detroit,
right? Because they stink and they need a lot of help. And they need a lot of hits, right? So that's number one. Phil Forsberg, we cost you a lot. He's 26 years old. He's in the sweet spot of age with respect to the way this team develops. It would cost you a lot. You know, and they say, well, they're not going to trade Phil Forsberg. Guess what? You make them trade you, Phil Forsberg. You just go all in, ante in, because that guy is a play drive. If you look at his advanced stats, he's a play-driving left wing. He scored 28, 30 goals in this league. He's been fantastic. And the one guy that wouldn't cost you anything is Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, who I think would be a and people say there's a halo effect playing with Connor McDavid, but he's playing 22 minutes a night. He's not a bum. Like, if he was an average player, he wouldn't be playing 22 minutes a night. He's not great in the faceoff circle, but he can play center. It wouldn't cost you anything. It will cost you probably $6-7 million. I don't think. See, people think that, oh, he's making $6 million. Now he's going to make $8 million. Well, ask Taylor Hall about getting that contract, and ask Mike Hoffman about getting a contract. It's a flat cap. People aren't throwing out. People are not signing Jeff Skinner contracts. You could probably get it for the same thing, because Edmonton, you would think, would resign him. They haven't extended him. So that would be the better, because he doesn't cost you anything from an asset standpoint. It's just money. Now, you want to put Forsberg and RNH on. You want to think that Anthony Mantha at 6'5" would dominate with Kopitar? He probably would. So I think there are some options right now that either via trade or free agency you can grab and just, you know, make this team better.
No, Dennis, what are you going back saying about Phil Forsberg? I mean, yes, he's more of an expensive commodity, but, you know, people can say, oh, well, this was years ago. True, but like, you know, you go back to Nashville's like cup run in 17, you know, and just probably, you know, you give credit to Subban and all them, but Forsberg, I mean, he was on fire that postseason. Yeah. I know the Kings don't have to worry about postseason performers just yet, but like, I mean, Forsberg had like what, 60 points in 22 games that year.
He's a guy that would fit with this team too. Because of the situation. I'm not advocating. Look, I can advocate trading for on the defense, like Chris Letang.
Right.
I'm not advocating for trading for Chris Letang. He's 31 years old. Like, the guys that we targeted the fourth period, both on left wing and defense, they're young players. Yeah. Okay. Jacob Trickard. Okay. They're never going to. Don't say that. They almost traded OEL. They would trade Jacob Trickard if you made it worthwhile. They don't have a first round pick. They don't have depth in their, with respect to their prospects. You make them trade you these guys. So that's it. I know you guys love Jacob Slavin, but wow, you can pull that one off. Wow.
Yeah, good luck.
I mean, he lost the executive in the year because he is just, he's a superstar, really. And
it's not a bad option.
Yeah. I think Philip Forsberg would actually be one of the best options. I mean, the only problem with Forsberg is he only has 1 year left on his deal. So if you can have some kind of deal where like similar to what Mark Stone did, where he kind of re-signed as soon as he got traded, then I'd be I definitely would do that. I'm gonna throw a couple more names at you though that I've been looking at. The Winnipeg Jets are going to be in a little bit of a cap crunch coming up with PLD needing a new deal. Neil Ponick's going to need a new deal coming up after this year. So Kyle O'Connor or Nikolaj Ehlers are going to have big deals, and with Cole Perfetti coming up. That maybe those two players might be on the move out coming out, and Nikolaj Ehlers would be a great left wing one for the Kings and playing alongside Kopitar.
I like the other name, Russ. I love Kyle Connor.
Yeah, Kyle Connor.
I would move a lot for Kyle Connor. You watch that kid finish. There's nobody on this team that finishes like that. So I get Nikolaj Ehlers. He could be good. If I had to pluck a player off that team, it'd be Kyle Connor. He would be amazing here with these center players because he's already playing with elite centers, right? He's playing with Mark Scheifele. He's able to play with a Kopitar. That's easy for him. He's already produced at that level. So I get Ehlers. That's a good option. But the guy I would pick off of Winnipeg would be Kyle Connor.
Yeah, because the options I'm looking for, I mean, you want to be trading for a player that has term left. You don't want to make right. this that's other type of Milan Lucic deal where you've got 1 year left. And then he leaves to the Flames next year.
Yeah.
So if you're going to be giving up a lot of prospects and picks, you want to make sure that player's staying. So, I mean,
That's what that's somebody inside the Kings tell me that they want to trade for controllable talent, which means it's going to be a guy in the early to mid 20s that's got term left. They don't want to trade for the guy. And Phil Forsberg might be the exception, but he's such an exceptional player and would fit with this team. That's why I suggest it. But you're right. It's going to be guys who are in their early to mid 20s where they got more term and they control because they're going to, when they want to step up to the next level, they're going to need players like that. So again, they're not trading for Geno Malkin, right? I mean, it's not happening. Those big names that people suggest. That's why Eichel makes sense because he's 22 years old and he's got term left. Yeah, it's a lot of term and it's a lot of money, but that's what they're trending towards. That's the type of acquisition they'll make, Russia, correct?
I've never been high on Eichel because of his Herbaz's attitude. But yeah, Des, what you were saying about like if he goes to a different city, it's different scene altogether. That can help. But I was going to say it's like because you just said his age, and it's funny because Eichel's been the league for a while, and you know sometimes it's easy to forget that he is only 22, right?
Yeah, he's 22. Yeah. He's been in the league for what? 4 years, so he's a bona fide 80-point player. Look at his numbers. He is absolutely.
Yeah,
it's a question of if you think of what his character is. And again, remember, like way back in the day with Dean, when the first talk about getting Kovalchuk with his team was back in like 2010. And he said he didn't believe the room was strong enough to trade for a player like that with a questionable attitude. Well, if you don't trade quick, then you've got Brown, Kopitar, Carter, Doughty, and Quick. I think that those five guys could manage that player.
Right? Absolutely.
So I think that it shouldn't be a concern. Because you wonder if he does truly have a bad attitude, and that's about reputation, is he going to infect the rest of these young kids? Like, is he going to be like, are they going to look up to Jack instead of, and they're going to connect more with Jack than Andre, because Andre's, 33, 34 years old. Jack's 22. And Andre's married and has family and stuff like that. So once we get back to normal, guys go out after games. They're not going to be hanging out with Kobe. Kobe's going home to Manhattan Beach. Jack might be going up to Hollywood to have a party, right? So that's the one concern I think that they might have is that but that's where you got to do your research and due diligence, and you got to talk to 10 people or 12 people or 15 people about Jack's character, and then if you're comfortable with that and you're comfortable with the acquisition costs, then you could think about making the trade.
Right. Yeah. Good points.
Yes. Excellent. So, Dennis, at this point with the Kings, then, what's more important for them, to either get the left wing one or to get the dynamic left D at this point?
I think the left D one, because if you get that, then you're set. You're absolutely set on the blue line because, again, I like the kids. Right? But and the other thing, Scott, is that there's nobody really left in the system. Like, I'm not believing in Durzi. Like, there's nobody left, right? There's not another guy coming. Unless you don't make that move and the team falls out and you luck out and you get the 10th overall pick and you get a D there that you can maybe move up, but it's not going to be Owen Power. It's not going to be Luke Hughes. So for me, I think the more essential one is to lock down the D, make the D move. And then, like I said, I think you can make – because I think with respect to the winger, there's options in the free agent market as well as trades. With D, you're not going to get that guy in the free agent market. I don't see it. I don't see that guy coming. So to me, if I had to make one move, and that's what I've been advocating all along, I'm not saying make five trades for the Kings. Make one trade. It's for the top pair left side defenseman that they've looked for a while. Austin Tran? Great story, right? He's the replacement for Curtis McDermott that everybody hates. Right? So that's where you go with him. He's at best like a third pair defenseman, which is not a bad thing. It's not disrespectful to us. He's come up. He's a little bit more physical than the rest of the team. And remember, because you look at this team, like they're not. If you look at Tampa or you look at Dallas, they're big on the blue line. This team is not big on the blue line, other than Curtis McDermott. They're small. Like Mikey Anderson, small. Bjornfoot, small. Matt Roy, average. Sean Walker, small. So I get why you want to play Strand, and I think he's a better defensive player than McDermott is. Although I think that McDermott, look, you got to spot the guy, and then some nights you got to play him. But Austin, I think Ryan best is 6 or 7 D, a depth guy. And he's not going to be expensive. So I think it's a great story. I think he's made some strides that nobody thought, but I don't see him being, you know, an impact player on the defense for this team.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. I think like you mentioned, I think the defense is pretty much set unless they make that kind of deal. I mean, I will say, I think there are players still in the system. I mean, Brock Faber is looking pretty good. Cole Holsch, you don't know what you're getting out of that. Yeah. Jordan Spence could turn into that power play kind of dynamic player. But obviously, there isn't no Quinn Hughes. There's no Cale Makar in our system coming up. We need to find that top pair of lefty. But I'm still going forward saying that left wing one is what the Kings will be missing. Because if we go into next season with Alex Iafallo as our left wing one, this team's not going to be a bona fide playoff contender.
That's a good point. Because who's your left wing two?
Mm-hmm. Is it going to be Kempe? Is it going to be Athanasiou? I think the Kings should trade Athanasiou at the deadline. I mean, even though he's an RFA, I think you can get a lot of value for how low his contract. I mean, his contract's only 1.2, and with all these teams up against the cap, you're going to find some great value for a contract like that.
He's going to get you a mid-level pick. So you need that. This is the last you need a draft pick, right? So, mm-hmm. Hey, Ron, you had a question about Tahoe.
Yeah, so, I mean, obviously you were there for it. Other than the sun, I mean, can you just kind of walk us through your experience there?
It was nothing short of amazing. And I was there. Yeah. The first game, I went out and we were there. It was weird. The media, there's only 12 media allowed to view the game at once. There was a riser in the back behind one of the nets, and you go and stand there for one period, right? So what they did was the first period of the Colorado game, Colorado Vegas game, they brought out the first group. I was a part of the second group. They bring out the second group, and then the sun comes out and everything melts, and they postpone the game. So I never got to see any of the game. I was standing there waiting, watching Zamboni. So they said, "Look, you didn't come out for the first, so we're going to take you back for the start at 9 o'clock." And I get it. There was no mountains. There was no lake, guys. It was so eerily quiet watching that game. It was like amazing. It was beautiful. Yeah. And I see what they should have done is they should have played those games at 4:30 local. There was an hour left of sun, right? And the sun's going down. And it was beautiful, but I think it was fantastic. But don't get used to this. They want to play outdoor games in front of 50, 60,000 people. This was a substitute for the Winter Classic because they didn't have an outdoor game. It was a brilliant idea. Yeah, it was a tough break with the sun. And, you know, look, I woke up that morning, I did hot stove, and it was 26 degrees and overcast. I go, this is going to be a perfect day for the game. And I should have realized that there's like 310 days of sun in Tahoe, and the sun's going to come out, and the clouds are going to break off. And that's what we had. So, and look, you know the players, Makar and Landeskog said, we would have kept playing, but, you know, they decided it wasn't safe for us to play. It was a one-off. But look, I'm sure you guys have been in the Stadium Series games. They've been amazing. We got to get back to that because we got to drive revenue in the sport. Despite the contract that they signed with ESPN, we got to get fans in the buildings, a lot of fans back in the building. So expect to win a classic in Minnesota next year. Expect the outdoor game in North Carolina next year. So it was a great situation. They might do one-off. I've talked to Steve Mayer, who's the head of events for the NHL. He's always wanted to do one on the Rideau Canal in Ottawa. Amazing, right? But that's going to be it. They don't want to take the expense and time to build these rinks and not play in front of fans.
And don't mean to brag, but I grew up in Ottawa. That's the only time I ever bragged about that, by the way. So.
Dennis, who would you like to see who would you like to see the LA Kings play in the next outdoor game?
Well, my partner Jonah Hovind suggests this. I want a home and home in the two football stadiums with the Vegas Golden Knights. I want them to come to SoFi and play here, and then we'll go to Allegiant and play there. I think that would be amazing because you could talk about Anaheim, you could talk about San Jose. The big rival is going to be Vegas I just keep going back to that playoffs round in 2017, and surprised to how much noise there was when Vegas scored a goal at Staples Center, which I never would have thought. That's the team because they're the hot team right now. The other two teams, to be frank, the Kings are better than both of them. I mean, Anaheim is a disaster. I don't know why the coach and GM is still there. San Jose is just screwed. I mean, with their contracts, they're screwed. So I would like to see Vegas because that's just a building rivalry. And I think there's some resentment with respect to Kings fans because, you know, it's been a straight line up for Vegas at this point in time. So those would be, in fact, technically an outdoor game, but it's a stadium game. I think those would be, that would be the team I would want to play.
Well, it's the best way to promote those brand new stadiums. Like you mentioned, Allegiant Stadium's looking great. It looks like almost like the Death Star over there in Vegas. And then you got SoFi out here. I mean, what better way to promote those new stadiums? I'm sure those football owners would definitely be up for that. I mean, you can get 80,000 fans watching hockey.
And the players like it, Russ. They really enjoy it. Like when they go out there, you know what they enjoy? I'll tell you, they enjoy it. The night before, when they take their families out on the ice and skate, they love that crap. They just absolutely eat that up. They take pictures and stuff like that. And you guys know these players. They're amazing players. They're amazing people. They're just so good. For one or two exceptions, they're really, really good players. So, So I think that would be it because of the nature of the rivalry that's building between the two teams. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, Dennis, that kind of segues into a listener question that we have for you. It's from Richard Sarabia. I know him as Dirty Harry on Twitter. But this one in particular, he wants to know, if you were commissioner and you could pick anywhere in the U.S. for the Kings to play an outdoor game, where would it be and who? Well, we know who the opponent would be, but where else would you go other than the football stadiums? Anything different?
I'm trying to think what other venues could be. Well, you know, Luke Robitaille's always talked about playing a game on the beach. So I think and I remember how great the stadium, the Dodger Stadium was amazing. So sure, I think that would be the one place where I think you'd want to, if you construct, and again, it will be in the model of the Tahoe game, right? There could be a lot of fans there, but to play a game on the beach, in Manhattan Beach or Hermosa.
That'd be
or
wicked. Dodger, yeah.
I think that would be the one type of game that I'd want to see played with respect to if I was commissioned with respect to LA.
Very cool. Right. Very, very cool. You guys got anything else?
I actually just have one about the league in terms of moving forward with the divisions and the realignment. Sure. With Seattle coming in next year, you know, obviously they had to pretty radically realign things this year, but do you think there's any appetite among the league to maybe keep, say, like the old Canadian division together moving forward, or are they going to maybe just go back to what it was in previous years plus Seattle in the West?
Yeah, great question, Jack. I don't think they have any appetite to keep it the way it is right now because it's just strictly about border travel and quarantine. I think, Jack, they do have an appetite for changing the schedule with respect to how they play. I think they like these baseball-type series, Jack, where, you know, in the second game, there's a lot more anger in these games. You see, and they said on Hockey Night and Canada Night, the fights are actually up this year because you're playing the same teams over and over again. You're playing them back-to-back, and the guy with a questionable hit in the first game is going to pay for it in the second game. So to your point, Jack, I think we're going to go back to the alignment we had, but I don't think we're going to see – and I always joke about it. Like, does anybody in January really want to see the Carolina Hurricanes come to Staples Center? Yeah, really? Yeah. If you want that extra game against Vegas or Anaheim and stuff like that. So I think they'll go – it won't be that perfectly balanced schedule. I think you'll see more rivalry games. But I do think that they're going to go back to those standard divisions and the way we had the playoffs as we've had before this season.
Well, and a lot of players seem to be talking about they're like in these 2 or 3 game series as well. Like cuts down on the travel for that.
Especially for the West Coast teams, Jack, right? I mean, you'd rather if you're the Kings, you'd rather be playing a division than going across the country 3 or 4 times. But, you know, it's like some, you know, you want to put Andre Kopitar in buildings in the East. You want to see him play there. So I think that, and it's always it's not even the Kopitar discussion. It's always the Sid Crosby and Ovechkin and McDavid. You got to share the wealth with that. And that's never going to go away because this league is star driven. So that's part of it. So, but the players do like this better. I think that's part of the reason. Not only did he have 9 months off, but a guy like Kopitar is more fresh because he's not flying to, you know, he's not flying to Tennessee or Florida or New York City and going on, you know, 10 game trips. When you go on a 6 game trip, you're going to Anaheim, Colorado, and St. Louis. That's not really that much taxing. So, yeah, I just think that they got some learnings from this. They're going to tweak the schedule with respect to who they play, but not the divisional play.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. And Dennis, to your point on Kopitar, I recall on a recent media call, he said he's going to bed at midnight rather than like 2:30 or 3 a.m. Yeah.
That adds up, Ryan. It adds up.
All right. Well, listen, I got one more question from Richard. So I know we were talking about he's probably got 10, but I'm going to give you one more of his because it's actually a pretty good one. I want to hear what you think about this. So he's asking if, on a scale of 1 to 10, how satisfied are you with the Kings where they are right now? 1 being bad, 10 being the best.
I would say 8, and I would move it to 9 if they make the postseason.
That's not bad.
Just very good. Yeah, I mean, I agree. I mean, I think it's, I mean, hashtag play the kids. If we're able to get more games from Quentin Byfield toward the end of the year or some other Sammy Fagamo or players like that, I mean, I think this team, that's a great development year for players. I mean, you've gotten games from Jared Anderson Dolan. You've gotten games from Rasmus Kupari. I mean, that's really all you wanted from this series was development, right?
Yeah. Right, exactly. And I see Manny has a question. Team Canada captain Drew Doughty, yes. And then LOA. So he should be on the team. I think that.
Yes, he should.
You know, he took it personally, and I think that's sort of the motivation, but he's clearly one of the best seven defensemen in Canada. Come on. He's been a crappy year. He said, look, this team was bad. This team had Willie Desjardins coaching. Do you know what this team like was so disinterested in playing for Willie? I mean, really. I mean, so Drew, I had some questions in the early year, the first seven or eight games. I think what happened with Drew, guys, is I think there's a new level of maturity. I mean, he's married now. He has kids. And he's that outburst that you see, remember when Drew would go in the penalty box and smash the stick? And I think the fact that he's not playing Matthew Tkachuk this year has helped as well. I just see a new level of maturity with Drew. I just see that the outburst starts that he's controlling himself more, maybe because he realizes there's a bunch of kids on his team and he can't really go off. You know, when you play with veterans that don't really care, you can do that. But when you're supposed to lead by example, I just love the maturity from Judas' last 20 games. And I think that, yeah, he's become an elite player again, and it certainly should be on Team Canada.
I agree, yeah.
What do you think about him wanting to keep the media out of the locker room going forward?
Well, I asked Kopitar if he agreed with me. Because, yeah, I'd be for that too.
Oh, boy.
It's Drew being Drew. Like, I asked that question because I know what he was going to answer. He loves it. He just loves it. It's just never going to happen. I mean, there is concern among the hockey writers that we would be limited. And I will tell you that probably to a man, the players will prefer us not to be in the room. But when you sign a $500 million or $600 million contract with ESPN, we're going to be in the room. And I asked Gary Bettman about that. I just very pointed. I said, what do you think about a prominent player like Drew Doughty saying we shouldn't be in the locker room anymore? He goes, I can understand why he said that. That's not our view. It's not the view of the league. You need more exposure for this game, not less. Mm-hmm. And I get it with Drew. And you know, Drew just likes to talk sometimes and be controversial. So I get it. I understand it. But it was kind of funny because I'm pretty good at relationship with Kopitar. So when I asked that, he texted me and he said, you know, you should mute your microphone because you're laughing after you asked me that question. So I get it. Like, you think like 2 years ago when this team sucked, that they wanted to come out, and not for nothing, the whole team isn't out there when you walk into the room. There's two guys anyway, and they come out. Oh, you know, so there's two guys in the room. The PR guy might ask you for one or two other guys, and they'll come out. This is not like you walk in and all 20 guys are on mats in there. More so practices, but after post games, I get it. You play 2.5 hours. I'm going to ask you what a power play sucked tonight. Like, you're going to really love that. You know, you want to get in the car and drive home to Manhattan Beach. I get it. I understand it. But it's essential. And I think these guys get it in the big picture that we do have to promote this game because it's such a great game.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I know Ryan and I are hoping the Zoom calls or whatever you want to call it stay around in some capacity next year. You know, he's in Toronto. I'm in Chicago.
Sure. Yes.
They might – MVP advent of the future. It might be incorporated in, but it can't be the only way because you know what you lose on that? It's two-dimensional. You lose nuance. And John brought up a great point on the podcast that, like, the best stories are when you can go over to a guy's locker and talk to him for 10 minutes. You can't do that anymore. It's so antiseptic, yeah. And you can't get to everybody. Right? And the guy who has a bad game, he doesn't have to hide anymore, you know, in the dressing room. I'm not available. Right. I'm going home. So that's the troubling part is that we're not getting that exposure that we need to get. So I understand it. But I think it's going to be incorporated at some point in time because it's pretty easy to use. And the players and the coaches are becoming more comfortable using it.
Except for Daryl Sutter, right?
I was just going to say that.
What was he drawing? And then the first one, when they introduced him, he had his phone down on the desk, looking up, not facing him. So you saw his ceiling was one ceiling on the floor. He's
projector.
I'm like, oh boy, this is going to be something.
I will say that the NHL is a better place with Daryl Sutter in it. That's for sure.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah.
Oh, he can say that again.
Yeah.
Oh, that is awesome. That is awesome.
It really is.
Well, listen, I think that's about all we got for you, Dennis. Anything else you want to add on?
No, I just really appreciate your guys' support on Twitter and supporting what we do here at the Fourth Period and Kings of Podcast with John. So it's always great. And I think the fans are amazing. 99% of the people are great. Like, I don't know anymore. I just have my own opinions. I'm not smarter than anybody else. I've been around a team for 20 years. I get it. I understand it. But I'm happy to engage with all the fans. I think it's great. And I think the Kings fans should be really, really happy about what's going on. And I'm more critical. I think I'm the most critical of the media here because I like to see more. But they should be happy. They should be happy with the job this front office has done and be excited about what's happening in the future. But I appreciate you bringing me on, McGraw.
Well, we just appreciate the heck out of it, too. Thank you so much for coming on and taking your time on a Saturday night to talk to us like this. This is just a wonderful treat for us. Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Dennis.